you know, you could also do an intermediate.
You could do a deeper well.
Because I've got a deeper well at my house.
The water's fantastic, right out of the ground.
$27,000, but we could do it.
But then you got good water.
But if you get it.
You could make the case. You'd have to file for a variance, but I think you could make the case. Because if it's geologically separated, the horizontal separation is irrelevant. Yeah, if you had to, you could make the case, but you'd have to get a variance to do it.
If we got a variance to do it, then the answer is always going to be
yes.
Another buyer is not going to realize that you're in a completely different geologic unit. So if you have the space, I would just put the distance in. If you want to go deep, go deep. I mean, I think mine's like 80 feet. That's fantastic.
Well, a 90-foot cost.
Yeah, he's not there. Let me run down the appropriate person, but Kyle would be a good start.
Well, I mean, it might even be artesian at that point.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're going to the intermediate, like let's just say it's 200 or 300 feet down, I don't know where the upper confining layer in our area is at around 20 feet. And a lot of wells just went down to limestone and stopped. Well, it's gonna be sand until you hit that bedrock. They just stop. And a lot of times they just don't drill below it. That's your shallow wells. It's like they stop when they hit rock. They provide water. It's great for irrigation. It's kind of sketchy. See, mine's a deeper one. It goes down to like 80 feet, and it's fucking phenomenal. It's not artesian.
I've got an artesian.
Yeah.
Sulfur.
Yeah, mine's got a slight sulfur taste, but you know what? It tastes great, though. I mean,
it's really good for you.
Yeah, well, no, it tastes good. I'll drink it right out of the hose. It still smells, but it tastes really good. Good water, I've had it tasted. Like, there ain't nothing in it. Just hard.
And that's what you still have senses right next to it.
I see that your little steak's right next to it. Sorry, earlier this morning I did write a check to see if we did some construction.
Thank you. Have enough time to report. I was exempt from the 2 foot. I'm seeing,
could have just been somebody fixing a pothole. It doesn't look like it's even old one. I've seen some pretty freaking old ones, and it doesn't even look like it used to be. Of course, I didn't want to start, but I'll tell you, it did not look like a gas station, and it used to be.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, is it could be that those three cutouts were support posts for somebody to pull in. But there's nothing on the ground. It's like an island.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Been great so far. I started about June right after graduating.
Well, I mean,
very generous. No, you can't do that. If I could tape those off.
No, they're going to end up having. Girl Heather sign on. I forget what office.
Good morning.
Good
morning. Good to see you. Again.
She's not from around here, but she's in my office. You know, all the people that have to see in our meetings.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to be the one. He'd be the boots on the ground.
I've done by today.
I trained him pretty good. He doesn't have 5 years.
Thank you. I love you. Impressed.
That's what I told him. I'm like, actually.
I trained him in this little dreary, I know, gray day.
Absolutely. Good, have I?
Watch the sea of lost stuff.
No. All the.
How about the sea of lost?
Answered all the information.
What you really needed.
But what it did was it fed my phone number 10 different insurance.
That's real.
And so
I know this
at 5:30 last night, my morning.
Hi, how are you doing? It's good to see you again.
Yes.
Now,
if you need to move, it's easy. Let's try to
eat it. I haven't done the same
thing. Because I've been getting calls sitting here.
Crush.
Yeah. Right. There's always something. Every time we think there's going to be a slow period.
Yep.
I did it.
By water policy group we met this morning, they reminded me that we want to do a tour.
Yes.
So I'll email y'all.
Absolutely. Like, I want a little more than that.
Hey,
yeah,
yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes.
That would be great. That would be great. Because Bud did a presentation.
So I just
do you have the Zoom app?
And so there are other questions. I'm sure we'll have questions after today. And that would be wonderful. So I'll email y'all and figure out.
It's not registered yet.
Not for me.
Yeah.
So
it's
really weird.
How about you, a prescriber?
So it's going to be basically fire company.
Yes.
And so I wanted a little more beef.
We can cover the whole watershed. So we're looking at things in the headwaters in Central Florida. And, there's a water project in the headwaters. It's $400 million. The legislature flow water that was drained to the innumerable lagoons back to the sea. It's being looked at as water supply. And so we want to have the conversation about what amount of that water should be reserved for the natural system. They do that in other rivers in the state, but not in the St. John's. That will help offset saltwater intrusion. So we're actually working with
absolutely. Because
I can send you a boilerplate.
Yeah, it'll basically allow Central Florida
your phone to send it to your team.
Chris Harris?
In particular. By Desiree.
She wants us to buy her life insurance so that she
But, it's there's still this misconception that fresh water coming through the estuary is lost. Estuary needs fresh water, so it's not lost. And the South Atlantic Bight depends on fresh water from the St. John's, so it's worth making sure that people understand the value and the need of that. In terms of everything that's changing, in addition to quantity, so those are the two things we're trying to have a watershed conversation, but everyone's looking at their piece of it as the more realistic.
I'm a twin. The fourth were on the team.
Our presenters are logging in, so give them maybe a minute or two.
Good morning,
good to meet you. I'm Farrah.
Commissioners, I need three boots up.
Good morning.
Hey, man. Good morning. Good to see you.
How are you, man? Good to see you. Any You had a landing spot yet? I think the last time we were here, you were like, you were just turning
her. Slid in on the end there.
The last time you were here, you were like, she is a toxicocracy.
Yeah. No, actually, I've got right after this. They wanted to schedule for 11. I'm like, I need a few more minutes to get to a parking garage.
We were talking with the Willow Branch Park folks, and they were like,
That was coffee.
Yep.
Yeah. No, he's got my resume. There weren't.
It's what I say to my constituents, too.
Yeah.
They're not really prepared.
Yeah. No, they weren't ready. Well, they didn't go any other time. Green's still back behind the ears.
You're busy. Very busy. Next week's gonna be very busy. Are you
going to
be
good? Yeah. Awesome. Well, he
interviewed me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's gonna be a good interview.
Yeah. We're just waiting on folks to kind of log in before we get started, everyone.
They called me yesterday and they were like, yeah, we just interviewed Drew. We got like on the same day as you.
Can we talk?
I was like, I hadn't really thought about that.
We can turn the conversation up and see what we can do.
Yeah, that'd be perfect.
Hey, Wayne, how are you?
Good. We've got to get into vacation shape.
What's that? Yeah, I think so. Good morning, everyone. All right, well, we got people logging in and kind of working some stuff. I know that I've got a hard 1 hour deadline. I got to run to another meeting after this. So let's kind of dive right in. We're gonna go around, starting with Commissioner Hartley, and just kind of do a roll call. Who's in the office? Who's in the room?
Rick Hartley, Commissioner.
Rich Reddick, Commissioner.
Kurt Wilson, JEA.
Hi, Vu of JEA.
Lisa Reinemann, St. John's Riverkeeper.
Dewey Peluso, Council District 7.
Adam Hoyles with the Environmental Protection Board.
Mike Barker, Waterways Commissioner.
All right. Well, thank you all for being with us today. We've now had several meetings regarding the River Accord, what the last River Accord looked like, what a new River Accord could look like. I'm going to be having conversations with the administration the next couple of weeks to kind of figure out a good framework for maybe future meetings to make sure that we're really starting to put a real document together. That's the driving force behind all of this. We've had some really good presenters in the past, and we're fortunate today to have some great presenters as well. And I'm really happy that we have so much JEA participation in all of this. You guys are a major part of the solution here, and you know that. So today we're supposed to be talking about the North Florida Regional Water Supply Plan presented by the St. John's River Water Management District. The plan itself, the document itself, is obviously massive. It's reviewed every couple of years, and the projects in there, during my time at the Water Management District, working in Tallahassee, the projects in there are ones in which you'll see state representatives and state senators say, hey, what can I do in my district? And they'll just pull out the document and they'll point to a few good ones. So that's frankly part of what I want to see us do here with a future iteration of the River Accord, to say, oh, we like that project and that project. Let's make sure that's listed as specific items that we think are of value to the city and to the future of our water supply, our own water supply plan in the future, right? Sure, we care about Clay County and St. John's, but Duval is what I care about most. All right, do we have our presenters ready to speak on this? Lori, are you there? Lori, are you not there?
She's here, but it was 1 sec to get her on the audio.
Gotcha. All right, good deal. So the other thing I want to talk about is I want to kind of create the framework for where I think we should we should have the specific categories of like what our recommendation should be in the next document. Based on my time at the Water Management District, I kind of break it down into water supply, water quality, natural systems, and flood protection. I know that not everything that we've been talking about necessarily fits directly into that. You know, we've talked about tributaries. We've talked about resiliency, right? And we hope to have our CRO and probably one of our future meetings talk about what her document is saying about the future of Jacksonville in a resilient manner and the infrastructure projects that we probably need to be looking at. So, like, that's kind of my idea is we'll break it down into those four major categories and then maybe two other categories, maybe involving resiliency and, outlying tributaries. And then we kind of put in projects or things that we want to see in a new document as well as policy recommendations, right? I think one of the conversations that I've had recently is the St. Johns River obviously extends all the way down to the Indian River County. And so what happens in a lot of the counties further upstream affects us, quite a bit. So we should put in policy recommendations, I think, that, we would ask our friends at the state, both DEP and State House, State Senate, about, specific studies about saltwater intrusion, things like that, that affect us up here. So, even things like that, I think we should probably put in a document that doesn't directly impact, that does directly impact Duval County, but not necessarily something only we could do. Those are the kinds of elements that I think we also need to be discussing. All that to say, Lori, are you ready to present? Good morning. Thank you for being with us today. The floor is yours. If you could just kind of give us a quick bio, hey, who you are, and then kind of go from there.
Yeah, I believe Corey has a presentation that she's going to be able to be put up, and I was just going to walk through a few slides to just give an overview.
Yep. The presentation's up right now.
Yep, you're good to go, Lori.
We are actually starting even now to compile water use data that we will be using in the next five-year update. So there really isn't any downtime between water supply plan efforts. We just roll right into the next one. So next slide, please. So the 2023 North Florida plan is projecting a 135 million gallon per day increase in groundwater demand from 2015 to 2045. And it was determined through that water resource assessment that I mentioned earlier that all of this future demand cannot be met with using just groundwater alone without causing impacts to water resources. And so what the plan did is it did identify a variety of project options that are aimed at bridging the gap in projected water demand. And I do want to just make a note, though, that these are just project options. They're not self-implementing. Those entities that submitted projects aren't required to necessarily build and implement projects in the plan, but they are available to offer a suite of projects that, if implemented, can meet the growing demand in the region. So even though the 2023 plan is now complete and approved, the districts are still continuing to work with stakeholders in the region to develop and implement projects. So next slide, please. So you should be seeing a pie chart now. And this is just a breakout of the project options that we received during the planning process. And it's been broken out into the three main categories for the types of projects that we give. And you can see the estimated benefit and cost associated with these different types of projects. And I'll go ahead in the next few slides just do a little bit more detail on the projects that we received in the planning process. So next slide, please. So now you should be seeing the map. And this is just a map showing the general locations of the different project options that we received during the planning process. And it covers the gamut of different kinds of projects, but on this map you can see with the orange squares, that's representing groundwater recharge projects. The yellow triangles are stormwater harvesting projects, wherever you see the purple plus signs, reclaimed water system expansion. And any of the green symbols, the circle is ag and the diamond is public supply, but those are conservation projects. So it's a pretty broad suite of different types of projects located throughout the region.
Hey, real quick, hey Lori, what does 19 conceptual mean?
Could you say that again, please? Yeah,
Lori. Said that there's 24 water conservation projects and then 19 conceptual. Like,
okay. Conceptual. Those are projects that couldn't be mapped because they're still too conceptual in nature. So there would be certain aspects of the project that hadn't been fleshed out enough. But there was enough there that we wanted to memorialize those project concepts in the plan. And that's why they're not showing up on the map, but we did include them in the plan itself.
Okay.
So the first type of projects are what we call water supply development projects. And these are projects that provide water other than groundwater. And one of the main types of these kind of projects are those that increase reclaimed water availability that can be used to offset local irrigation demand. Another example would be like stormwater harvesting. And a lot of these kind of projects are already under construction, but we're also continuing to look for more opportunities for how we can offset groundwater use. We've recently put together at the district a stormwater working group that consists of staff from our water supply planning, consumptive use permitting, and environmental resource permitting groups that are working together to promote the use of stormwater harvesting, because this can be used to offset groundwater use for irrigation, like particularly in golf courses or in residential and common areas and developments, and even in like cooling towers for industrial uses. This working group is meeting with local governments and utilities and consultants to try to highlight the benefits of stormwater harvesting, but also working with those stakeholders to identify any hurdles that might be out there for the use of stormwater. Next slide, please. So the next group of projects are what we call water resource development projects, and these kind of projects are typically groundwater recharge type projects. And usually these projects are implemented by the districts, but many of the water resource development projects that we received are being proposed by individual utilities. So JEA, Gainesville Regional, and Clay County Utilities are all proposing aquifer recharge projects in the planning area. You're seeing pictures of our Black Creek Water Resource Development Project. It's a great example of how a large-scale regional project can help us meet the growing demand we have going on in the area. You know, this project will help to replenish the Floridan aquifer, benefiting water supply in the region, as well as helping to recover levels in Lakes Brooklyn and Geneva. Next slide, please. And then finally, water conservation really still is the most important action that we can take now to sustain our current water supply. It can delay the need for some of those more expensive alternative water supply projects that I was just discussing. We have an established water conservation emphasis in North Florida, but water providers are looking for additional ways that they can save water, you know, given the groundwater constraints we have in the region. The pie chart there on the left-hand side of your slide is very telling in that it shows that 50% of our residential water use is used outdoors to water the landscape. So there's a real water savings opportunity here, and that kind of water use. Our water conservation staff have been partnering with DEP to revise the landscape irrigation and Florida-friendly landscaping design standards to make it more robust. And these are the standards that local governments are required to use when they develop landscape irrigation ordinances. Our staff are available to work with local governments to evaluate their ordinances and to work to enhance the water conservation elements in those ordinances. We also have that Florida Water Star program, and we have found that to be very successful. It provides builders with a certification program that allows them to maximize water use efficiency in new homes. And we are seeing that homes built to Florida Water Star standards can expect up to 40% in water savings over traditionally built homes. So this is a real way to stay ahead of the new growth that's coming into the area, is to build things to more efficient standards.
Excuse me, Lori.
Hey, Lori, we have a quick question.
Hi, Lori. This is Lisa Reinemann, St. John's Riverkeeper. At the beginning of this slide conversation, you mentioned that something was not in place yet, but I didn't catch what you said.
At the beginning of your slide, you had mentioned that something was not in place. Was that the stormwater team?
It was something conservation oriented.
It was something conservation oriented. You mentioned it at the beginning of the slide.
I think at the very beginning, I didn't have anything about not being in place yet. The only thing you might be thinking of, Lisa, was when I was talking about revisions to the design standards that our staff are working in with DEP to update the design standards that are used by local governments in their ordinance development. Was that possibly it? That's the only thing that comes to mind as far as not quite.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And we do, our staff, you know, is engaged in various outreach activities in the region. You know, we're meeting with the Northeast Border Builders Association regularly to develop short-term and long-term goals with that group. Our water conservation staff meet with the water conservation staff, their conservation coordinators, and have a forum so ideas can be exchanged between the utilities on what's being effective in water savings. And there's a lot more tools out there available now for different utilities to use. University of Florida has the H2O Save tool, and that allows utilities to look at their water use on an extremely granular level, and it really lets them focus in on where their water conservation efforts can save the most water. So next slide, please. And this is my last one. I just wanted to share this because this is kind of where we are in the planning process right now since the plan was approved in December. The water supply planning process of the districts is very closely coordinated and is even statutorily linked with the water supply planning efforts of local governments and utilities. So upon approval of our plan in December, it triggered several time frames. The first one was that within 6 months, we as a district needed to reach out to all of those entities that submitted projects to be included in the plan. And it was to let those entities know that since they have a project in the plan, they need to provide us an update every year to let us know about the, what kind of progress was being made toward implementing that project. But like I said earlier, this is not a regulatory document. Entities are not required to implement a specific project that was in the plan, but if they aren't going to implement something that was specifically submitted, they would need to show us, you know, what projects they are considering and pursuing. And this just establishes, you know, it makes sure that every year we get an update on what they're, how they're progressing or what it is they're proposing. The other thing that happens after a plan is approved is that each local government is required to amend their comprehensive plans by adopting an updated water supply facility work plan within 18 months. So in this case, that would be in June of next year, of 2025. Our district staff have already sent emails out to all of the planning departments of the local governments, just reminding them of this statutory requirement. This would be Steve Fitzgibbons. And these water supply facility work plans, they just need to identify what water supply projects, including water conservation or reuse activities, that are going to be necessary to meet existing and future water demands over a 10-year planning period. Most are used to doing these kind of updates, but Steve Fitzgibbons is available to assist, you know, with any specific questions that anyone might have on those. And then I'll just close by saying that, you know, we are continuing to work on every level, with different stakeholders in the region, given these groundwater constraints we have, and we're just looking to build projects of every kind. You know, we are focusing on trying to come up with regional projects, you know, something similar to Black Creek that would have a broader benefit to the entire region, and always have, you know, a strong focus on water conservation. And the last slide is I simply just included some different names and contacts with the district for the staff that would be related to some of the different topics I talked about today. And with that, if there's any particular questions, I can field those now, or you can certainly reach out to me after this meeting if you have more specific things you'd like to discuss. And thank you for, asking asking us to be here today to talk about this. I'm sorry I wasn't able to be there in person, but I'm glad we were able to make technology work for us.
Well, we really appreciate you you calling in and doing this. Is it being relayed correctly? Can you hear me? we honestly really appreciate you coming. I know it's a Friday. It's Friday morning. So it's a lot to ask. I wanted to see. So can we get actual copy of the work plan? Because I don't see a list of projects here, but that'd be kind of helpful, I think, as we move forward.
You can look in Appendix K of the North Florida Regional Water Supply Plan, and it has a breakout of all the projects in it.
Appendix K.
Appendix K, and that link there for the northfloridawater.com. That's where you can actually go and look at the plan itself and the details.
So northfloridawater.com.
Yes. There's tables, and it gives, yeah, 10 or 12 characteristics of the individual projects. It gives the name, the sponsoring entity, a brief description, planning level cost, implementation time frames, expected water benefits. That's all spelled out in Appendix K for each project submitted.
And I assume JEA had a major role in that. Right, good. Makes me very happy to hear. So maybe we'll take a look at some of those projects, and you guys can tell us which, the top couple that you're planning on implementing and what your planned ask is at the state and at the local level. I think that'd be good for us to kind of see and holistically develop. Not that we're taking anything away from JEA. You guys are the decision makers here. We just want to make sure we know what's going on. All right, are there any questions for Lori right now?
I have two. Hi, Lori. This is Lisa Reinemann again, St. John's Riverkeeper. And I really want to talk about water quality and what protections are in place to ensure that the water supply planning is not undermining the health of the St. John's River. One is specifically about the Black Creek Water Resource Project. That's designed to withdraw 10 million gallons a day in high flow conditions, as I understand it, from Black Creek. And there are times where if the conditions were not right, that there would be unintended negative consequences to the St. John's. What protections are in place to ensure that those water withdrawals are only taken at a time when there are truly high flow conditions? How is that defined?
Hey, Lisa. I don't know the detailed operational procedures that are laid out for when that project comes online, other than it is, as you said, they are going to only be withdrawing water when it is environmentally safe for the system to have that water available. So they will have monitoring requirements, on flows, I would assume water quality, but I don't know the details on the protocols that are in place to ensure that, other than they will only withdraw water, if there's no environmental impact to the system.
And who would be the best contact for us to invite to have that detailed conversation?
I can get you that name. I'll make a note of that and find out who it is you can speak to get some more specific details.
And then this is a related, but it's in regards to Central Florida Water Initiative. The water supply plan in Central Florida will have an impact on water quality in the St. John's River downstream. And so I'm curious, and it may be that there'd be another contact, but regarding, what is the district doing to ensure that the salt freshwater regime is protective enough to ensure good water quality in the lower St. John's River, take into account Central Florida Water Initiative activities as well?
Yeah, and I can also get you a contact name for our Central Florida Water Initiative coordinator's name is Callie Register. But I would say similarly, we've done studies on the St. John's River, and I believe we updated the study that was done several years ago, and it takes into account water quality as well as water flows. But I can provide you her contact information as well.
Yeah, that would be great, and not to put you on the spot, but that study did say that sea level rise and stormwater runoff would offset the impacts of the Central Florida Water Initiative,
And so I think that that needs to be further reviewed, and I've not seen any reports to go into the further water quality conversation about that.
Okay. All right. I'll give Callie a heads up on the kind of information you're seeking and give you her contact information.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Are there any more questions for Lori? Excellent. Thank you so much again, Lori. We really appreciate it. You as well. All right, we got about 30 minutes left. We are now going to dive right into the JEA presentation on wastewater system resiliency, sanitary sewer overflows, and nutrient credits. That is quite a topic. Mr. Vu, the floor is yours.
Good morning, Council Member Paluso and the River Accord Task Members. My name is Hai Vu. I am the VP of the Water and Wastewater System at JEA. JEA was asked to address these questions. How much JEA had progressed since 2006 in repairing and replacing old leaking pipes along the St. John's River and its tributaries? What are the actions taken to remediate SSOs that do occur? And what specific actions have been taken to increase overall wastewater system resiliency? So I hope to answer those questions in today's presentation. So first, a little background of the JEA water and wastewater systems. We serve about 372 water accounts through 39 water treatment plants and 139 wells. We produce about 120 million gallons of potable water a day with peaks up to well over 200 million gallons in the summer. For wastewater, our customer accounts roughly are 293,000 customer accounts. We serve those customers through 11 wastewater treatment plants or water reclamation facilities. We treat about 80 MGD and reclaiming about 22 MGD for reuse, primarily for irrigation. An incredible fact about our system is that we own and operate over 1,600 lift stations. That's the most that I am aware of any utilities that own out there by far. Together, the two systems include over 10,000 miles of pipe that JEA personnel maintain every day. Updated the sewer pipes to over 6,000 miles now. So this graph shows that since 2006, JEA has invested nearly $2 billion into our wastewater system. This does not include the $50 to $100 million that we spend on operating and maintaining our system annually. It was slowed down after 2008 because of the recession. But since 2017, we picked up the work, especially with the lift stations and the wastewater treatment plants. Last year, we spent over $200 million upgrading, expanding our existing plants and building a new plant, a first one in Duval County in nearly 50 years. That trend will continue this year as we plan to spend over $500 million in water and wastewater infrastructure.
Where was that plant located?
It's Greenland, so it's by 295 and US 1, cool. Right near the Greenland Energy Center. This map shows the work that we've done with older pipes near the St. John's River and its tributaries. As you can see, much of the rehab was completed in the Ortega, Lakeshore, Fairfax, Five Points, and South Bank areas. Overall, nearly 100,000 feet of failing sewer mains near the waterways were rehabbed. Much of the work I would deem as reacting to a failed pipe. Not much has been done proactively, so we will start two proactive programs next fiscal year to replace pipes that are deemed likely to fail, mainly the smaller pipes made of cast iron and asbestos cement, and I'll talk a little bit about that later. So what impacts did all of the investments and rehabilitation have on the environment, on the SSOs? Well, we track the SSO through several metrics. The most important ones are shown here. The two graphs on the left and the top right graph show the number and the volume of SSOs reaching the waters of the state. So how are we doing compared to others? The top right graph tracks the metric that JEA can benchmark against other utilities. As mentioned, we have over 10,000 miles of pipe, over 6,000 miles of sewer pipe. In trying to normalize that compared to other utilities, we determine the number of SSOs per 100 miles of pipe. We strive to be in the top quartile. That means that the rate of SSO per 100 miles of pipe needs to be less than 0.56, and we were able to achieve that last year. Well, at first glance, it seems that we're not making much headway, but please realize that the system continues to grow. We gain about 120 miles of deep pipe each year, and it continues to grow old. A lot of our system of 50 years and older, about the lifespan of these pipes. So the top right graph, again, back to that metric, SSO per 100 miles of pipe, does show that we're trending downward since 2017. Of course, the huge outlier you see, especially in the two bottom graphs, is fiscal year 2017. So what happened? Shortly two storms. 2017, fiscal year 2017, started in October 2016, Matthew happened. And in September of 2017, Irma happened. And I will speak to our efforts to deal with that later. So when an SSO happens, what does JEA do to remediate and mitigate? The immediate actions are to stop the flow as quickly as possible, contain the spill, collect it and send it back to our wastewater treatment plants, clean and disinfect the sites if possible. If the spill reaches the waterway, we clean it and disinfect if we can. We always monitor and sample at the site, upstream and downstream, to make sure there are no negative impacts to the environment and to our customers. To mitigate is a longer story. We do perform root cause analysis on each SSO incident to determine if it's a one-off or systemic failure. If it's systemic, we develop a project to address the issue. We are increasing our monitoring and cleaning efforts. We have level monitors throughout the system. We have a manhole inspection, prioritization, and rehab and replacement program, and the air release valve inspection, prioritization, rehab, and replacement program to identify the likely failure points and repair and replace those before they fail. We have found that the older, smaller diameter asbestos cement and cast iron force mains and gravity mains are most likely to fail. As I mentioned earlier, we're implementing these two programs starting in fiscal year 25. We are finalizing the capacity management operation and maintenance called CMOM, and the Comprehensive Wastewater Collection System Action Plan to further identify and repair, replace failing assets. We are proud to have developed an in-house platform and shown in the picture in the bottom right there called Augmented Operational Intelligence, which can monitor things like wet well level and power status, generator status, the fuel status of over 1,600 lift stations. This program is very useful in a storm event and enabling the folks at the EOC to quickly assess the health of our system during a storm event. And each year, we continue to add generators and diesel backup pumps to minimize SSOs at lift stations. This graph shows how are we doing with the total nitrogen discharge to the river. Since 2001, we have decreased from about 1,300 tons per year to less than 500 tons per year as the 12-month average. Much of this is due to the investments that we have made upgrading our wastewater plants. As you can see, currently we're about 220 tons less than our allowed total maximum daily load of 716.6 tons per year. So we have been able to provide credits to the city and also sell about 9 metric tons to private industries.
So what work is the city doing then to reduce its nutrient load?
That is a good question. I have to rely on somebody from the city.
Roger that.
Can I ask, do you know what percentage the JEA credits cover of their loading reductions?
I do not.
Okay. All right, great question for later.
And I'm sorry, what was the number you said to private industry? Is that on here?
Yes, it's 9.02 metric tons. Yeah, 9 to American Water, which is running the wastewater plant at Mayport Naval Station.
Thank you, Kurt.
So we go to resilience. What has JEA done for resilience? So for our water and wastewater system, we initiated our resiliency efforts around 2016, 2017. And the driver of that was Matthew. As many of you recall, before Matthew arrived, Jacksonville had not experienced a significant storm event since 2007. Although the first coast area received only a glancing blow, we experienced significant rainfall and storm surges. During Hurricane Matthew, JEA's water and wastewater system performed very well in maintaining service to our customers, as less than 1% of our customers lost water or sewer services. However, we experienced significant sanitary overflows during the three-day period afterwards, primarily due to power outages at over half of our lift stations, 54 of which experienced SSOs. And what happened? Many of the pump stations were not backed up by generators. For those that were, some experienced issues during the power transfer. And although JEA had portable generators and pumps on hand, we did not have enough. And it was time-consuming to wire these up, especially when facing rain and wind during a storm. So in response to Matthew, we assessed the pump stations, determined which one needed permanent backup power, and ordered 47 new generators and 7 pumps. We also secured a contract for leasing 100 portable generators for the 2017 storm season. The JEA staff built tethering cables with color-coded cam locks for the portable generators, which made it much easier to hook up. And for the critical and vulnerable pump stations, we converted the overhead electrical services to underground. So historically, JEA and many other utilities have primarily focused on minimizing our impacts to the environment. But it's safe to say we considered but hadn't focused on the environment's impact on the utility systems. So in 2017, we began to focus on resiliency and developed a multi-step plan framework to resiliency to implement near-term, mid-range, and long-term strategies. So when Hurricane Irma occurred in September 2017, it set new flood records in Northeast Florida. Again, we experienced power loss to more than 50% of our pump stations, but the SSO volume was 80% less than that of Matthew. In pure numbers, it was 1 million versus 8 million gallons spilled.
Great.
So beyond the efforts of 2017, JEA engaged Jacobs Engineering to develop a science-based methodology to build a more resilient system. The goals of our program were first to understand the current and future severe weather and climate risks. Second, we want to identify the vulnerabilities, and they were combined to develop capital investment priorities to maintain safe and reliable services to avoid future interruptions or SSOs. We also wanted to review our design standards to identify opportunities to enhance system reliability, to reduce severe weather risks, and to develop forward-looking designs. Through a variety of adaptation strategies, such as elevating, hardening, and building flood barriers, capital projects were identified to mitigate the identified flood risk using cost-effective strategies. Finally, we developed a plan as a roadmap to implement a strategy. The plan was and is an action-oriented list of activities to harden our system. So we developed the goals. What were the steps? The first task was to establish extreme weather scenarios. We looked at sea level rise, storm surge, current projected rainfall intensity, duration, frequency, and created the 8 scenarios for modeling. It included scenarios 25, 100, 500-year storms in 2040 and 2070. We considered both low and high greenhouse gas emission scenarios, and we used the global climate model. Next, we performed flood modeling, and to ensure the models were accurate, the surges we experienced from Hurricane Matthew and Irma we used to validate and calibrate the models. Next, we performed a vulnerability assessment of the nearly 1,700 water and wastewater facilities. 142 were found to have an elevated vulnerability to flooding, so these facilities were advanced into the risk assessment phase. We then developed cost impacts and adaptations for these facilities. We performed risk analysis on those 142 facilities. We developed mitigation and adaptation strategies for each asset, as I mentioned, either elevating, hardening, or installing flood walls and barriers. We also performed economic cost-benefit analysis, and its purpose was to evaluate the economic impacts to the JEA customers if they were impacted by a JEA facility shutdown. Finally, the investments were ranked based on the return of investments for the different levels of flood control, and from that list, we develop our roadmap consisting of the improvements of projects and incorporate them into our capital improvement plans. So what current efforts are we implementing? As mentioned, we've developed and now are implementing the capital improvement plans for resilience projects. Most of these projects are within a larger project, for example, elevating assets or improving the electrical components of a plant. Typically, we'll roll the improvements into a larger capital project. We're doing things such as electrical grounding improvements on multiple water treatment plants to improve our redundancy. We're continuing to update our design standards for resilience. We're continuing to add generators and backup pumps. We perform this exercise each year to determine how many and where we need these pumps, and we continue to rent additional portable generators and pumps for the storm season. We continue to evaluate and, if necessary, convert the overhead to underground electric services to the critical vulnerable pump stations. With all the changes, we continue with the training of our staff, and our efforts are paying dividends. The last 2 years with the storms that we received, we did not get any storm-related SSOs from the storms. So moving forward, JEA has developed a resiliency task force. So we're not looking only at this hurricane and the flooding, the sea level rise, asking how resilient is JEA versus how resilient is our infrastructure. You know, we're looking at the areas of vulnerability and risk throughout our utility. And what are JEA's and the community's priorities, and how will we mitigate and recover from the impact? We're looking at other risks, economic risks, like the fiscal crisis, deflation, inflation, the environmental risk of extreme weather events, not just hurricane, but the freezing events, geopolitical risks, conflicts, possible terrorist attacks, societal risk of social instability and large-scale migration, and technological risk of cyber attacks and critical infrastructure breakdown. And that task force remains to look at these items each day. So that's it. Thank you so much for this opportunity to speak to you, and I'd be glad to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vu. Are there any comments? Go ahead, Commissioner Reddick.
If I could, just one question if we went back to the nitrogen discharge graph. And this is instructional and informational and not anything else. Tell me what's going on in the last 3 years that are kind of squeezing and pushing things up.
Yes, sir. The main factors that contribute to nitrogen discharge are how we operate the plants and weather. Weather we cannot control. If the winters are colder than normal, it will affect the what we call the bugs, the ability of microorganisms to process. That typically will increase nitrogen a bit. But the major cause the last few years, I mentioned all the construction activities at all the major plants, Buckman being our largest plant, Buckman having a large impact, and we will spend over $400 million there. When we perform construction at a plant, we lose our flexibility and operations, and we don't have the ability to optimize our treatment. That's one factor. The second factor, and we're working hard on this, is we are getting some sort of toxic hit on our plant from outside. We talked about leachate before. I'm not going to talk about it here. That's one. And that's why we're limiting the leachate that's coming into the plant. But we're seeing something else that's literally killing our bugs. So we are engaging multi-consulting firms to help us from different perspectives. One firm to look at process treatment, what we can do immediately to help Buckman. One firm to look at the perform a toxicity study to see what can possibly impact our plant from outside. And another firm with artificial intelligence and machine learning that can quickly look at thousands of points of data and help us identify possible scenarios. So we are struggling a little bit with our biggest plant. That's why you're seeing an uptick in the last year in the nitrogen discharge.
Thank you.
And that plant is being addressed?
I'm sorry?
The plant itself, there's work being done to reduce it?
Yes, sir. Okay. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Do you have a question, Mr. Wallace?
I usually do, but I don't today.
All right.
Good, very good presentation. I appreciate it.
Dr. Pinto?
Hi. So you mentioned proactive plan going forward to address, infrastructure failures and that kind of thing.
Yes, sir.
Do you have any idea what the goals and what you plan to achieve with that? I mean, what are you going to go after? Where do you see the need in that plan? Can you shed any more light on that?
Yeah, the main goal of our proactive programs is to reduce SSOs. But what causes SSOs? The pipe breaks, the manhole failures, the clogging of our lines. So it's all of those looking at to reduce the grease in our lines, monitoring the manholes, and cleaning the lines to make sure that they're functioning the way they should, and identifying the pipes that are likely to fail and repair or replace them before they do fail.
Mr. Wiles? Or Commissioner Wiles? Or did you have another follow-up, Dr. Pinto?
You also mentioned this. You start with the small pipes?
Yes, sir.
So the cast iron small pipes?
Yes.
And you have... How do you do that? Do you have cameras that go up the pipe, or how do you determine? I mean, I suppose you can prioritize by age, first of all, but can you shed a little bit more light on how you go about tackling the problem?
That's a great question, Dr. Cherry, because that's one we are grappling with. First, we use historical data on what has failed, and so that gives an idea of what is likely to fail, and we know what our pipes are made of. So we know from all the materials, all the pipes, what is likely to fail first. But the question I think you're asking is, how do you know which one to attack first? And so we are looking at firms to help us with artificial intelligence. They are looking at satellite data. They're looking at ground water information. They're looking at vegetation. They're looking at anything, any information out there that can correlate pipe failure with other environmental factors. But mainly we are depending on our folks who are out there every day repairing and replacing these pipes, point repairs, and to give us an indication of a systemic issue that out there that we can go and address prior to failure.
So I just have one other question. With the septic tank phase out, so it's going on the north side, hooking up to sewer. is that new? That's not new sewer pipe they're hooking up to, or is that new sewer pipe that they're hooking up to? Is there an opportunity there to address failing infrastructure while you have things torn up, basically, or?
Usually, if we go in into an area and do a septic tank phase out, it will be all new sewer system, and eventually we will hook up to an existing system such as a pump station or a larger force main. But those are typically more, call it recent or modern. We do go in. We have committed to the neighborhoods in the city to upgrade the water system as well. So if the neighborhood does not have water already, we will put in new water system. If it already has the water system, that is most likely is undersized or aged, and we will go in and upgrade the water system at the same time. And we do coordinate with the city as far as the storm water system. If drainage can be improved, then that's going to be part of the city's, but we coordinate with the city hand in hand to make sure that's done. Sidewalks, roads, et cetera, we coordinate with the city.
Thank you.
Real quick question. Well, first I want to say thank you all. Y'all, from the resiliency perspective, you know, watching what y'all have done after Hurricane Irma, it was very impressive. And y'all were probably took the most action immediately, and we did see that benefit with the storms that we've had more recently. My question is also back to the old infrastructure. You know, unfortunately, in Jacksonville, you know, 75 of our tributaries are chronically sick with too much fecal bacteria. And some of that sanitary sewer overflow. So I see that progress there, and I see some progress on addressing leaky pipes. But is there an accounting of understanding of how many pipes fall into that older category that need to be addressed? It seems like if JEA and the city and others are working together, because I know it needs resources, and that's something that potentially we could all work on together to try to get those resources, particularly around these tributaries, which are throughout the county, that have too much fecal indicator bacteria. So how do we tackle that? How do we tackle pipes? I mean, first, I guess, is there an accounting of that? That's something we can understand the magnitude of the problem that needs to be addressed.
As far as accounting of leaking pipes, if there's a leaking pipe, it is on the list to be fixed or repaired. So there may be a backlog of work that needs to be done, but I don't think that list is such that's in the, I call it, in the miles range. There's a backlog of work that's typically 30 to 60 days that we get it done. For us, it's that, I call it the leaking pipes, you know, thinking, hey, there's a drip going on that we don't see. It's the point failures that erupt and spew out that we're typically dealing with, because the force mains are typically under pressure, and the gravity sewer, if they fail, they back up into somebody's home, and so we have to deal with those immediately. We do have, I do acknowledge that we have an INI problem, infiltration and inflow. If we know that water is coming into our pipe, then we acknowledge that water is going out. And that's what we are also working on. One of the proactive programs I talked about is working with firms to look at our INI problem and reduce that. That's a great question.
And remember, what does INI stand for?
Infiltration and inflow.
And I guess maybe this is a question, because I know we're about to end for next time, but is there a community or a program that the utility with the local government proactively addressing INI programs that we may be able to learn from, and how we could collectively work together to help you all help our waterways?
That's a good question. I can't.
Well, for next time.
Yeah, coordinate, but we do. We coordinate with other utilities, and I will put that word out and say, anybody has a great INI program that can serve as an example that we can follow. I can certainly do that.
Thank you.
All right. Sorry to say, we got to kind of move to public comment. Mr. Nooney, come on up. I will give you your 3 minutes, which will take us beyond 11 o'clock. So if you could do faster than 3 minutes, I'd be very pleased.
All right. Hello, I am John, Philanthropic Resiliency Newton, 856 Bascom Road. All right, real quickly, you know, for those that are on waterways, you know, this is TEU 3 days ago. And, you know, here's a piece of legislation, 2024-0178, declaring that a certain real estate piece of parcel to be declared surplus to the needs of the city. Now, get this. So under the amendments, provider oversight by Public Works Real Estate Division, city to retain access rights to the property for environmental monitoring. Okay, is JDA aware of this? Is the St. Charles River Water Management District aware of this? Properties not suitable for affordable housing due to inclusion in a flood zone. Is JDA aware of this? Is the Water Management District aware of this? See, this was in T, you know, as far, it was never in the waterways. Should it be deferred? Now, and the reason I'm mentioning this piece of legislation, now, still need a sponsor for our place. Our place is 2.5 acres, and we have 1 acre of Category 1 wetlands next to a FEMA house. Should have already been demolished and returned to city control. And I'm wearing my Deanne Criswell shirt. And she's the head of FEMA up in Washington. And let me just say, okay, real quick, let me just change gears here. I attended 3 meetings Wednesday. First had to do with the armory. You know, I mean, what a joke that one is. You know, that's on Hogan's Creek. Okay? Zero access to the waterway. Next meeting I went to was the Tree Commission. Now, the Tree Commission, they don't plant trees, they don't save trees, they plant trees. So, but then after that, I went to the DIA, you know, downtown. And this has got to be the biggest joke in the country. But I participated in this resiliency thing. I was in 4 of these infrastructure committees. You open this book, and I'll tell you, you flip the page, and you get to page 7 and 8, and this is Jacksonville Today. I hope this is getting on the camera. But, you know, this is not yesterday. This isn't tomorrow. This is today. And you know what I did yesterday? At 10 o'clock, I launched at River City Brewing, took it over to McCoy's Creek, right underneath, bought 2 reds within like 15 minutes. Just floating, you know, just a circle over a piece of shrimp. I caught an incoming tide, catch the outgoing tide, took it down to Bergen, took it down to Hogan's Creek, went all the way up past the armory. There's a big fallen tree, so you can't go any further. Then came back, spent 6 hours on the waterway. You know, you had your sip and stroll. You know, I mean, that was going on. Get the boat traffic and stuff like that. You know, I want to be one of the biggest cheerleaders, but I'll tell you something, we're getting crushed. And so,
thank you, Mr. Nooney. We appreciate it.
Be a sponsor. Take anybody. JDA. You know,
he'll take anybody. Thank you, sir. So for our Waterways Commission meeting, I will have a framework that I'll submit to everybody. And if you've got thoughts, ideas of what should go into, you know, our MOU or our future, hopefully, River Accord, please send those to me. We will have them ready for our next River Accord meeting. I'm looking right now at dates. Hopefully, April... is the 19th at 10 a.m. in this room. Does that work for everyone? April 19th. Yes. All right. It's a Friday, I believe. So we're moving it from 10. I'm sorry, from 9 to 10. So you get to sleep a little bit later. Assuming none of us sleep in. All right. If everyone's okay with that.
10 a.m.?
Yep, 10 a.m. on the 19th. And then, of course, we've got our Waterways Commission meeting, which is, when is that, Brooks? I'm thinking the 17th. Nope. 20, nope. When's our next Waterways?
Where's the next one?
It's 17? The 11th.
Is it the 11th?
Thursday the 11th.
Gotcha. Yep, Thursday the 11th at 1 is our next Waterways Commission meeting. So again, I'll have a framework for everyone to kind of be able to add stuff into or provide the recommendations. Other than that, this meeting is adjourned.
Oh, when is thank next you.
The 11th is Waterways.
On May?
No, 11th of April is Waterways. And then the, what would we say, the 19th?
Following Friday.
Yep, is going to be our next.
We'll send out our calendar invites today, so everyone
has it. Oh, wait, I'm supposed to be on the Buzz TV. Might need to move that one. By the way, I didn't even mean to do that about the nitrogen one. I was like, COG is way up.
Let's hope I don't need
another for a volunteer session.
We're fine. I know. I just got to get it happens. The June 4th.
Sorry, you're not up here. Next time, come sit down.
We're going to have you all go up to the floor.
And there's an input to the resource plan, which was a great model.
I will say some people don't love the block.
Remember when I was at the district, though, it was like, hopefully that helped.
And you got numbered, though, right, Mike?
I know that was a big problem. Now, something around me.
But win-win across the spectrum, I think.
I mean, by the sea level rise and with the amount of climate change, we're seeing more rain events. It helps.
Water harvesting's going to become a lot.
Congratulations.
Hey, hi, how are you?
We've got him upstairs in the lobby.
I got to run. I got a meeting upstairs.
Yeah. And so, yeah.
Well, the good work.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yes,
all
right.
Thank you for coming to all these, by the way.
The fourth floor, council lobby. Where you'll take the elevator up.
Into the entry where you...